Good evening, WWPN fam, or whatever time of the day this podcast finds you. My name is Gerald Cooper. This is the Hour of Honor, the best damn Ring of Honor review and analysis in all the internets. All of them. How's it going, fam? Glad to be with you. Glad to be back. Glad to be watching Ring of Honor, man. I'm going to repeat myself quite a bit in this intro, starting off with, I could not be happier to be watching and reviewing Ring of Honor. not wanting to throw my shoe at the TV at the 3-hour telecast on Monday. It's a good feeling to not want to do that. Again, I'm off the WWE team. Actually, that's not 100% true. Brooklyn 3, TakeOver Brooklyn 3, brought me back. I absolutely watch all the takeovers. The takeovers are like the Marvel films. You hear people complain about the trailers and the stuff that they see and the casting that's announced. I don't see how anybody at this point couldn't give Marvel the complete and total benefit of the doubt every time they put a movie out just because of their track record. You may not get precisely what you want. You may not get the hero that you're looking for. There's a Dark Knight reference in there. You may not get the hero that you want to see on screen, but you can never argue the quality. People are you know, probably Thor and Ant-Man are the movies that people complain about the most. But again, you really can't argue the quality story. Maybe there are some stuff you may not be into, but you can't argue the quality. And I feel like that's what TakeOver gives you. When a couple of takeovers back, a lot of the podcasters that I listened to were really down and really, oh, this is uneventful and they're on a downslide and everything else. Like, how? You know, there's a difference between something having the buzz that it's always had and the shows being of a particular quality. Those things are completely separate. Completely separate. And when they intersect, it's great. It makes for a more exciting lead up for you personally. But as far as, again, the quality of the shows, takeovers just don't let you down. So thankfully, WWE's producing a product that I do still enjoy. So speaking of WWE, and we're going to flow that into some Ring of Honor observations. Again, where I will be repeating myself. JBL has, quote unquote, stepped back, was the quote. He stepped back from his duties as a commentator on SmackDown. There's a lot to say about JBL, and I could easily, it's been a long time, talking about the ins and outs of who he is, but I feel like it's a good thing. Well, let's start with the statement. Stepping back leaves the door open to step back in. It's very, very apparent. He didn't say quit. He didn't say he was leaving. He said he was stepping back. And he said he was stepping back for a good reason. And if that is not his reason, that was the perfect one to put out, because he's leaving to focus on some of his philanthropic endeavors. That's a good thing. And you, if it's a load of shit and he's selling us a bill of goods, he does actually have a philanthropic foundation. I think it's he helps young boys in the Caribbean, young kids who could find themselves in a lot of trouble if they didn't have some leadership and some focus. So you can't complain about that for everything else that he may or may not have done. I think they kind of, I'm not going to say they blew an opportunity by replacing JBL with Corey Graves, because Corey Graves is great. Corey Graves is very good at what he does. I'm a huge fan of Corey Graves' commentary, always have been since NXT. When he found his groove down there, that was okay. This guy is it. He went to Raw and modernized that commentator's booth, and he's going to do something similar over on SmackDown. I think the one thing I would have liked to have seen is that void be filled with a different and unique voice. We know who Corey Graves is as a commentator right now. I'm sure there are women out there who can do the job. I'm sure there are just, again, unique voices and thought processes that would bring something different to the table that they could have plucked. And listen, you can't complain about WWE saying something that works. Corey Graves is a talented guy. And for a change, recognizing if it's not broken, there's no need to fix it. That's different for them. You know, you ride that horse out until you can't ride it anymore. But back to JBL. It's a good thing. It's a positive. And it's not to kill him, because he had his drawbacks as a commentator. He was extremely overbearing, and I know that's the character, but he stepped on matches at times. And not just his commentating teams. He was too big. He was too present at times. I want to watch the match and have the commentating enhance the match, not me to focus on the commentating. And that was one of his drawbacks. One of the things that he did well, and I can't think of who it was. There was another podcaster who I'm sure will come to me eventually. He kind of dogged Bradshaw out for the sort of running down the list of accolades when a veteran star would come in, you know, legend level star would come in. And I always enjoyed that, actually. JBL did bring a historical perspective a lot of times to matches and to personalities in the ring. And either if he was either supremely prepared or his recall is just that good to go back and be able to cite dates and times and matches and things like that. And we forget that the guy's been around. He's been around for a long time, and he's been a lot of places. So he's seen a lot, and he was able to apply that knowledge and awareness to the commentating a lot of times. So, you know, there's that. So to move that into Ring of Honor, Ian Riccaboni. Ian Riccaboni is very good at his job. It took a second for me to kind of, you know, or for him. I either way, you know, the relationship is symbiotic when you're watching somebody on TV week in, week out. It took a minute for me to feel him, and I think it took a minute for him to find his voice. And I think he has. But I also think he's making a turn. And I mentioned this before. Like I said, I was going to repeat myself a little bit. Ian Riccaboni doing Michael Cole is no bueno. I personally do not want that. I think it diminishes what he's good at with the Michael Cole hyperbole. And I also think it doesn't fit what Ring of Honor is. Moreover, as I said before, it goes against, not going against is not the way I want to say this. Ring of Honor has an identity, and this doesn't fit or suit its identity. When he's just calling a match and calling moves and telling a story of a match, he's very good at his job. When he's playing a character, when he's acting, and we get a little bit of that in these episodes that I'm going to talk about, it's not good. It's not good, and I think it's glaring, because it doesn't come across as genuine. And for instance, that's clearly me and my, you know, the whole thing where I don't finish a thought before I move on to something else. But think about a guy who is always together, okay? Like, you see him every day, gets on the same train, his suit's together, his ties is immaculate, his shoes are shine. And then you see that one little piece of, I don't know, cream cheese on his tie. It becomes glaring because every time you see him, he's Don Draper. He's completely put together every time. There isn't a hair out of place. And that's what this feels like. When he's, again, when he's calling matches, he's great. When he's playing a character or acting, it's not good. Again, you've got your identity as Ring of Honor, and everybody plays a role in that. Ian Riccoboni is the voice of Ring of Honor. He's the thing that sort of draws us in week to week, you know, whether we really realize it or not. We don't need another Michael Cole. They've got Michael Cole. Ian, please, be yourself. Be yourself. Do what you do and do what you're good at. Let them do that. They'll do that week to week and have people pissed off and have people angry, and you just go be the commentator that you were meant to be. So that's it for me for now. We are going to get into quite a bit of Ring of Honor in just a second. I will be right back. Ring of Honor 309 starts off with Coast to Coast versus Best Friends, Chuck Taylor and Trent Beretta. The Ring of Honor faithful are apeshit over Beretta and Taylor here, and justifiably so. Very good team, great personalities, just fine pro wrestlers. But I was most interested in seeing Coast to Coast get some TV time, get some burn, get some exposure with the crowd. I'm high on this team, and in a division that seems completely depleted, the Young Bucks need contenders. They need guys to work with. Young Bucks aren't going anywhere. They're the draw. So good that Ring of Honor is building some of these young teams. The match starts off pretty standard stuff. And that sounds so pretentious to say that it's standard stuff. And that's not what I mean. When you look at these four guys and what they can do in the first 3 minutes of the match is them, you know, having headlock exchanges. That's standard because, you know, they're going to start flying all over the place eventually. A little bit before the halfway point, Taylor hits Soul Food into a belly to back suplex combo. They're getting the heat on Ali for a bit, and then LSG gets a hot tag. And man, he's all over the place. He's diving. He's flying. I'm really impressed with LSG, but both of these guys, Ali, they get around the ring so well. Beretta comes off the ropes, and LSG looks like he's about to do Baron Corbin's deep six, but as he gets to the height of the move, he swings Beretta back across his body for a gut buster. I don't think I've ever seen that before. In this exchange, LSD, Freudian slip, LSG takes a nasty knee, running in on Taylor. Best Friends lay out LSG with this sort of double team cutter that looked like, okay, that's their finish. It looked like the match was over. I legitimately bet on that. But LSG kicked out at two. Beretta tries a tornado DDT, but Ali blocks it halfway through, scoops Beretta, and turns it into this crazy-looking, jumping, swinging Uranage, as Joey Styles would say, call it what you will. Then Coast to Coast starts to fly. Tope by Ali. LSG does this sick sort of corkscrew 450 from the turnbuckle to the floor. They toss Beretta in. There's a double underhook suplex, but it's like It's more like a slam. They double underhook him, and he's releases one hand, and he comes down for a slam, if that made any sense at all. Followed up by a picture-perfect frog splash, but Taylor's there to break up the pin. Taylor takes out Ali on the floor. He slams him into the guardrail. Beretta, inside the ring, just absolutely puts his knee through LSG's head. Taylor sticks him with a hard spike pile driver. He holds him across his chest, rolls him over directly to Beretta. Beretta cradle pile drives him for the victory. Now, all the while, Caprice Coleman is on commentary. And he was good. He was actually quite good. But he's also pumping Coleman's pulpit, which is going to be a spot on Ring of Honor eventually. He got me on that one, folks. So we'll see. The next segment, Jay Lethal is in what looks like a loading dock or a sort of private parking garage situation. I don't know. But he's, you know, talking stuff about Silas Young and come get it, Silas Young. And Silas Young does. but it's really a setup. They start the brawl, and it's really a setup for Bruiser to attack him from behind. The attack ends a little abruptly, and Lethal's there, you know, just calling out Bruiser and Young. So that's just another another drop in the bucket for these guys' feud coming up soon, or this continuing feud, rather. The next match is Matt Taven versus Jay Briscoe. Now, on commentary, they sort of pumped this as, you know, the hyperbole of a match that could main event anywhere in the world. And in this case, they wouldn't be wrong. One of the things I've really been appreciating about Ring of Honor lately is their main events. And this really almost should have been the main event of this show. And later on, we see why it hasn't been. But they've been putting on, and I think I mentioned this in one of the other shows, they've been putting on main events that feel like main events. They feel important. They feel like they mean something. They're enhancing storylines in their main events. They're getting people over in their main events. And I can't say that for every other show. It really is one of the reasons I'm just high on watching Ring of Honor week to week. This match is really Briscoe beating the snot out of Taven and Taven trying to stem the tide. It's very, very one-sided with the occasional move Matt Taven sneaks in. There's a series of uppercuts, European uppercuts, and it's got to be like 7 or 8 back-to-back. It had me thinking that they were going to do some type of referee stoppage, or it's like, this is kind of getting bad. And it got to the point where Marcellia comes in a ring, but Briscoe takes him right out. Orion is then pulled in a ring. He's got his crutch, and he's kind of poking it in through ropes, and Briscoe pulls him in. Briscoe threatens him. He's seated in the corner, and he turns his attention back to Taven, and the camera's literally over Ryan's shoulder. He turns, smiles at the camera, and takes off his protective boot. He had his, I want to say, had his ankle broken. I'm not sure specifically what the injury was. At Best in the World, I believe it was. Very nasty injury. We watched it as it happened, took him out, and he's good now. So good that he takes the boot off and clobbers Briscoe. They then, the Kingdom, all three of them, they then, I want to say that they put a chair underneath Briscoe's head as they laid him out, but they definitely put one on top. And all three men, three-man concerto, clobber Jay Briscoe. And we never see anybody come in the ring because they're doing just tons and tons of replays. But we do see, after the damage has been done, Mark Briscoe in the ring, nobody else around. He's tending to his brother. So this is doing two things. It's sort of carrying forward the sort of the dissension with Mark, Jay, and Bully. And Bully was nowhere to be found, so that might become a thing. And it also is it's putting the kingdom back where they were before they lost the six man championships. So expect to see some more come out of this feud, so to speak, this burgeoning feud right now. Next up is Dalton Castle and the Boys versus Colt Cabana and the Tempura Boys. This was automatically going to be like the best of sort of comedy gold and great professional wrestling. These are two great characters, man. These are two guys who I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself how great this feud is, and they're really not they're not ending it, which sadly they did end it. They're not ending it, and this is just another chapter in their story. Cabana is a great natural heel. Cabana puts me in the mind of, I was reading this Loki book. It was a Loki monthly book where I don't remember who did it or what the transgression was, but he did something and they reduced him to a 13-year-old kid, roughly. And Loki is hyper intelligent. He's curious. He's precocious. He's snarky and charming, and it endears you to this character. I loved 13-year-old Loki for the months that I was reading that book. And you take those personality traits and you move them up as far as, or better still, you make the intent a little different, and you've got the most evil dude going, and Cabana's got a lot of that same stuff. Like, it's the character's no different. The character is no different. It's just the intent, because Cabana's a little bro, you know, not crazy bro, but bro enough. He's smug and he's got a way about him. And again, you change the intent, he's an endearing baby face, or he's just a heel at, you know, when he walks out from the back and he's doing his entrance, you want to smack the shit out of him. I think that's a very interesting when it's not it's the same guy, but twist up the circumstances and you can get somebody you like or somebody you hate. Match gets going, and again, it's fun. It's a good time. It's everything you expect. I wonder if guys are wrestlers like doctors and lawyers and other disciplines where the natural thing to do is to never really crap on your compatriot, the person who's doing the same job as you are, and to kind of value what you do when you're out there. I'm watching Castle throw his suplexes, and they're beautiful. Like, they're outright beautiful. It's strength. It's technique. It's leverage. They're gorgeous and they're devastating. And like a guy like Taz who threw a suplex similarly, like is Taz sitting there thinking to himself, man, okay. This is the evolution of what I used to do, sort of thing. Just like one of the crazy thoughts that pop into my head, because I used to watch ECW and I love, oh my God, Taz's work was just, Taz really was the man back then. And watching Castle throw his suplexes, it brought me back there. Yeah, again, good stuff. Nothing that you didn't expect. There's a great sequence towards the end. Castle generally fakes his suicide dive, but this time he hits it on Cabana, tosses him in the ring. The boys do a literal tandem drop kick off the top rope where they've got their arms around each other's shoulders. He rolls right in the castle for the deadlift German. Tempura boys are there to break up the pin. In the final, Cabana's in the corner. Boy one or two, take your pick. He does a leapfrog over Cabana, but Cabana's right there with the dusty elbow. And you can't pop me enough. Like you just don't see that elbow anymore. And I love the way Cabana delivers that. Boy one or two, pick your pick, take your pick. Does the same move, gets the same treatment. Cabana sees a way free and clear at Castle. He runs at him. He's scooped up. Bangarang for the victory. So the match is over. Cabana's in the ring making faces and being angry. and Castle picks up the mic and says something akin to, you know, I'm a fan of yours, but you made it so hard for me to like you. And I've beaten you here and I've beaten you there. And this is the third time I've beaten you. Isn't it time enough for you to shake my hand and give me my proper respect? And Cabana does. Like he does it in his own way. Like he mocks like he's going to sneak him and do something dastardly, but he doesn't. And it's the face turn that we all really wanted. You know, Cabana's phenomenal. Cabana is my favorite color guy, and Corey Graves is right behind him. But Cabana is phenomenal on color. He's great on color. When he's not on, you know, because I'm sure he's got gigs where he still wrestles and everything. When he's not on, it's a downer. I'm sorry. BJ, a couple other guys, I'm sorry. Cabana's the man at that position. And I think, again, he's endearing there. He's very endearing there. So I believe that Ring of Honor saw it, and it was time to babyface him. Even if, like, you know, maybe he's not going to wrestle and they're going to focus on the commentary stuff, but it was definitely time to babyface him. So that's Ring of Honor 309. We are going to get into Ring of Honor 310 in just a second. With Ring of Honor 310. Show opens up with Jonathan Gresham and Jay White versus War Machine. War Machine is probably my favorite tag team in Ring of Honor. Big guys, like giant-sized guys who can get around the ring as well as they do. It's power and athleticism. I think the thing that I enjoy most about War Machine is that they are so creative with their monster stuff and their power moves, which you just don't see big guys doing everywhere. And I think White and Gresham realize that because they attack War Machine from behind in lieu of the Code of Honor. Now, I really enjoyed this little bit of storytelling for a couple of reasons. One is because it was smart. It doesn't make them heels. Because they did this, it makes them intelligent. They look across the ring and see two guys who are 300 and 300 pounds respectively, who can fly, who can flip, who can do a lot of the same things that they can do. Plus, they're super powered on top of everything else. They thought to themselves, maybe we should get on that ass before they get on ours, and they did. And barring very minor offense in the beginning, Gresham and White are on top for a long time. Nice long stretch. And they've got Hansen isolated. And War Machine basically gets back into it, being too big and too strong. There are just a bunch of moves that Gresham and White try to get War Machine in, and that War Machine is just not having it. The match ends with Thor's hammer on Gresham. And while this match was very entertaining, absolutely go watch it. I didn't want to get too bogged down in moves because the match really wasn't about the match, about what happened after the match. Punishment Martinez comes out and attacks Jay White yet again. This is something that Ring of Honor is doing very well. It's kind of like what they do over in NXT. They make use of that hour better than that show on Monday that doesn't use 3 hours well. You've got 3 hours and you don't do it well. You figure that one out. Anyway, I think the greatest benefit we get as Ring of Honor fans as watching this week-to-week show is we get time to miss guys. We don't see guys every week. If we do see them, it's not always in a wrestling capacity. It's moving story forward. It's moving feuds forward. On the other show, a feud lasts 2 months. And it's every week for 2 months. We get beat down with matches. We get beat down with interviews every week. Here, we don't see guys every week. So we get the benefit of missing them. If the last time we saw White and Martinez have an interaction was 3 weeks ago. So it's like, oh, this is going on. That's cool. Rather than, when are these guys going to move on away from each other? You know, like you can extend these feuds and these stories by virtue of just not having guys on TV all the time. And that's helpful for us. Next up is Josh Woods versus Shane Taylor. Taylor attacked Woods in the middle of that six-man mayhem match a few weeks ago, which essentially precipitated this match. I really like both of these guys. And Woods, they clearly like. He's somebody to really watch. If you think about seeing him for the first time to where he is now, top prospect tournament, he was getting booed to no reaction at all. Okay. And that's kind of fair in a sense because nobody really knew who he was. And that's the typical reaction. And he was still very rough. Every time you see him, he's a little bit better in the ring. Every time you see him, the fan interaction is a little bit better. I think this is and Ring of Honor is clearly high on him. I think this guy is something to watch moving to the future. Taylor, I really, you know, I'm a Bret Hart guy, and I said it a million times here. I love technical wrestling. I love great storytelling. I love drama in the wrestling ring. But I also love a good mauler brawler. I talked about JBL earlier. He's a great mauler, like one of my favorite mauler brawlers ever. Ole Anderson is one of my favorite mauler brawlers ever. Finley, who could throw a lot of technical stuff in there because he knew how to actually wrestle, but he was also a mauler brawler. Taylor, I think fits that mold and that just that size. Like the guy is an absolute freight train, and everything he does looks like it hurts. So I mean, both of these guys have a great upside, a great future. They both can do a lot. But clearly Woods is on Ring of Honor's short list to move up and do some things. Match opens up and Woods is all over Taylor. He did not forget that beating, clearly. And he's throwing hands, he's throwing knees, he's throwing elbows. And I guess we could talk strategy again, like within story. It looked to me like Taylor was taking his shots. He's absorbing his shots. He's throwing back, but he's mainly covering up. And it's okay. I take 30 of yours because that's what it looked like to get my one big one in. And he does in the form of blocking a couple of shots and just tossing his shit out of Woods into the barrier, the guardrail outside. Taylor gets a hard lariat on the inside of the ring, and then he hip checks Woods to the side of the head as Woods is seated in the ring, in the corner turnbuckle. A lot of this offense by by Taylor makes me want a Bruiser versus Taylor match. Like two big guys who are, again, surprisingly agile and creative in what they do. And just hoss fight. Let's go. I would like Ring of Honor to book that, please, and thank you. Wood starts to come back, and he's throwing hands, man. And the crowd's into it. Something's happening with Josh Woods and the Ring of Honor crowd. I really do believe that he's growing on the Ring of Honor faithful. At some point, Woods gets Taylor on his shoulders. And that's 300, like an odd 350 pounds at that, because Taylor is so bottom heavy. Like he's got these super wide legs. And as he's going up, like the crowd rises. And I'm sitting here with my eyes wide open, like, what the hell are you going to do with this guy on your shoulders? But Taylor slips it. He knocks Woods back down. And he tries to choke Woods. In doing so, he exposes his arms, which Woods turns into a cross arm breaker. Very nice transition. Taylor gets to the ropes. Woods lets the hold go, goes right into an ankle lock. Just rolls through, goes into an ankle lock. Very cool looking. Then another power display. Now, mind you, Taylor is 350. Woods is listed at 320 in change. No bigger than 325. He puts Taylor's lower leg in between their bodies, like basically pins his leg in between those two. Deadlift German suplexes Taylor, 350 pounds. That was just incredible, and a crowd popped huge for it. Taylor gets the advantage again with another hard lariat, but instead of pressing the advantage, he goes to get a chair. The ref stops him. Mid-swing. And while he's distracted, Woods whirls him up for the victory. Nice little match. Ignominious victory. But I think it protects Taylor. And it makes Woods look strong. It keeps his momentum going. So QT Marshall, who was on commentary, comes into the ring and he goads Taylor into attacking Woods. A little confused about what was going on here, but he's get on him. And he does a couple of hard splash. Well, I mean, he's 350 pounds. There's no other splash than a hard splash. So Taylor's, you know, holding his ribs. He's all beat up, and Marshall offers Taylor a payoff. We don't see the money inside, but he hands him an envelope. Taylor looks inside. He's happy, and they go away with Woods laid out in the ring. What is this exactly? If it is Taylor as a hitman, Marshall doesn't like somebody. Okay, go get him. I'll pay you off. I'm all in for that. I know that's very it's very, you know, the other guy, but that I'm all in for. It gives Taylor something to do. I think it will give us a look into his personality as a character, at least. And you know, these former Rebellion guys are all getting a little burn here. So that's a good thing. I've always liked the Rebellion, but you know, like I said, they were kind of useless as a team. So let's see what they have them do as individuals. Then it's announced that Minoru Suzuki, I'm going to say it again, Minoru Suzuki, I'm fairly new to Suzuki, but he was instantly like, okay, I'm all in. This guy as a heel, just, I am such a fan of this guy. Minoru Suzuki versus Cody for the ROH title at Death Before Dishonor. Folks, I couldn't be any more in. I couldn't be any more in with this. As big of a Cody fan as I am, I love the work that he's doing. I love his interviews. I love that they Ring of Honor decided to make him the man, like truly anoint him as the guy. Jesus. You know what I'm saying. I want to see Suzuki eat his face. if there's not face left in the ring when this match is over, I will be disappointed. This is going to be a great time. Because, as you know, unrepentant heel. Give it to me. Give me the purely evil heel. 24/7, all the time. And Suzuki fits that bill completely. And there's a Kenny King promo that was merely okay. Hey, let's humanize him. Hey, let's make it personal for the fans. Hey, let's get him to relate to people. It was just okay. It wasn't anything that connected me personally anymore to Kenny King, because I'm already a fan. I want to see him do some things. He's a fine talker, but I want to see him get in there, have great matches, get a title, get that TV title in particular, and have a nice run. That's what I think he needs. The main event is the Motor City Machine Guns versus the Young Bucks. This is everything you would think it would be. Even more fun. And it's a waste of time, and I would do these guys a disservice of going hole for hole. But this was just tremendous and fun, and it's again all the greatest hits of the Young Bucks, all the greatest hits of the Machine Guns. I will call out this inverted code red. Like you have to see this. Ian Riccaboni calls it an inverted cold red, and you got it. That's why you are the commentator, and I am the jabroni talking about your commentating, because I was like, the hell was that? What is, okay, thank you, Ian. I'm going to write that down and remember it for later. Just great stuff. So the match goes on and on, and the guys are doing their thing, and you get to this really insane super kick exchange at the end of the match. It's a Young Buck, so yeah. But it was just like they're just nailing the shit out of each other. And then Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian hit the ring, attacking both teams, laying both teams out, actually. Imagine, if you will, Bray Wyatt giving his rambly, weird, spooky delivery. He's a great talker, without a doubt. Forgive me if I sound down on it. But imagine him doing his shtick and saying he's going to win a title, saying he's going to cause chaos, saying that he's going to do anything at all, and then he actually does it. He would be legitimate. He wouldn't be the eater of pins, as we call him. I've been on this line of thinking forever, and he's like the person, the talent who could do so much as a heel, and WWE doesn't let him do it. Same as the Rebellion, as I was kind of disappointed and relieved at the same time that they broke them up. But here's the Rebellion, who's talking about bringing down what Ring of Honor stands for, and they're going to do this to this guy, and they're going to, and they never did. And they never get ineffective heels, useless. They're completely useless. Kazarian and Daniels said, "We're going to take away everything that the Ring of Honor fans like, everything that we enjoy. They're going to take it away." What is more emblematic of something that a Ring of Honor fan would enjoy more than the Motor City Machine Guns versus the Young Bucks? Nothing. There is nothing else. They took a great match and shit on it by interrupting at the end. Who's better? We don't know, because Danielson, Kazarian ruined it. Effective heels. We said we were going to do something, and now we did it. Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. You know why? Because you're legit. Tag team forever, former world champion. What's more legitimate than that? Oh, what's more legitimate? We say something and then we do it. We stand tall while the people you love are laid out. Effective heels. Thank you, Ring of Honor. Thank you. Anyway, that's it for me. We're going to get into Ring of Honor 311 in just a second. We're back with Ring of Honor 311. That does not begin with a commentator telling you what's going to happen. It does not begin with an opening promo. The Authority opening the show with a promo. 20-minute promo at that. It starts in the aisle with a fight. Ring of Honor, thank you. Lethal versus Bruiser, no DQ. This is, yes, fuck, and yes. Look, this is, it's dudes fighting, man. It's dudes fighting. It's dudes with personal issues between each other. Why would they wait for their cues? This is a good time. This is, I asked for this in WWE, and I didn't get it, and I haven't gotten it for years. You don't have to go to the Attitude Era in order to be compelling. But to have the standard, stale, same old, week-to-week turns people off, as it did me. This, I'm tuning in for this. It's fights in progress. And the crowd is dumb hot for this. The crowd is... all like as we're coming on, Rick Abani screaming his brains out, the crowd's wild, and Lethal and Bruiser are in the aisle, fighting to the ring, trying to kill each other because they don't like each other. And we don't talk. We don't just stand in front of each other and have a blood feud and talk. I punch you in the face because that's what people who don't like each other do. This is not rocket science, folks. But this is great. This is excellent way to start the show. I'm all the way in. Like I said, they fight to the ring. Bruiser misses a cannonball, crashes into the guardrail. They're outside the ring at this point. Lethal hits, I don't know if you want to call it a flying senton or a backsplash, but I want to say that Bruiser's in a chair at this point on the outside against the rail. And Lethal runs at him and literally just throws his back at the guy. And he clears so much distance. I mean, you know, Lethal's a lot heavier than he's been. He's looking like he's slowing down. But this guy's a tremendous athlete. You've got to see the distance he covers to get this backsplash, I guess you want to call it in. And while all this insanity is going on, the camera cuts to the bottom of the stage where there's about 12 security guys who actually managed to keep Silas Young from the ring, which is odd because we know how security works in pro wrestling. Generally, it doesn't. While all this is going on, they cut back to the ring and Lethal has Bruiser laid out chest first across Bruiser's own keg. And he's got the chair in his hand and he's going to whack Bruiser across the back. Well, he misses and he hurts his hands because of the contact with the chair to the keg. But Bruiser does not miss with his chair shot. The Lethal's back. It just gets more insane from there. Tons and tons of brawling. These guys are all over ringside, all in and out of the ring. We get a sequence where, well, early in the match, Bruiser had already set up a chair in the corner between the top and the middle turnbuckle. And you get a sequence where they're trying to throw each other into the chair. I want to say it was Bruiser going for a clothesline, but Lethal sidesteps and Bruiser goes to the chair hard, then to the floor as they're coming back from break. Lethal misses Hail to the King. They brawl a little bit more to have a couple exchanges, but in truly Randy Orton fashion, out of nowhere, Lethal gets a lethal injection. But instead of going for the pin, he goes after Bruiser again. Bruiser had introduced some duct tape earlier, and it was hung up on the bottom rope. Never came into play until now. Lethal duct tapes Bruiser's wrist to the bottom rope. He puts the keg on Bruiser's knee and slams the chair on the keg. He knifes the chair into Bruiser's knee and then slaps on a figure four and submits the Bruiser middle of the ring. Lethal then goes after Young, and they have a pull apart and they go away from it. This was a nice little additive to Young and Lethal's feud. Very cool little 7 minutes. It's just escalating. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger until whatever Lethal and Young are going to do, it's probably going to be completely out of control. We get a Cody promo talking about Minoru Suzuki and their match at Death Before Dishonor. Will Ferrara attacks Cheeseburger. he's doing the Masked Fan gig. They take a picture and Ferrara just goes nuts on him. And they get a little recap of the Addiction attacking the Young Bucks and the Motor City Machine Guns. And then we get an interview where Caprice Coleman talks to the Addiction. Coleman's whole shtick here is that he's not getting any respect, and he had ordered this huge set and Ring of Honor is stonewalling him. And it's just these three heels griping about Ring of Honor and griping about the fans. Just a cool little interview. Nothing special. Just moving everybody's story forward. Next up is Will Ferrara versus, I have it written here, and I hope I don't butcher your name, Howie Timbershay. This was very good for everybody. It's basically this Timbershay guy outclassing Ferrara, and Ferrara playing the cowardly heel. Ferrara running away most of the match. Timbershay looks fantastic. Great athlete. Got a good look, and he's got a beautiful singing voice. I have not the foggiest notion why. Somebody help me out. In or out of context, why is Howie Timbershay singing R. Kelly's Bump and Grind in the middle of a wrestling match while he's wrestling? I'm going to leave that to your imagination until you can actually see the match. But no, nothing happened. It was just this really odd. It was like, wow, Cabana's like, wow, the guy can sing. It's like, yeah, but why? It just made no sense to me. But he's a good wrestler. He's tremendous, and he's making Ferrara look bad the whole time. There's a scene where Ferrara, they're at the corner on the outside of the ring, and I want to say that Timbershay's singing again, but there's a lapse in concentration, and Ferrara grabs his arm, pulls him into the ring post, goes for what is obviously, like, it's, this is a suicide dive. That's all it is. And he turns it into a tornado DDT on the floor out of the suicide dive. I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. And then I'm brought back to reality. I have to remember, as much as I love Ring of Honor, Ring of Honor does what Ring of Honor does. And Howie Timbershay is completely fine in the next sequence. He should be dead. That is a finisher. He should be dead. And he got up and he wrestled more It didn't favor his head. It didn't act like he was, you know, a little wonky. And he was actually quite sharp, and he continued to make Farrar look bad. It's just, I'll never get past it. Stuff like that, I don't care what I'm watching. I'll never get past a move that should cripple a guy. And a guy gets up and, no, let's keep wrestling. It also ended. I was about to say, I don't remember how it ended. Sure, I do. It also ended with a tornado DDT in the ring because the first one outside of the ring just wasn't enough. And Will Ferrara gets the victory. I hate to sound like I'm down on a match because I wasn't, but dude, great move by Ferrara. Gorgeous move by Ferrara, but bro, you should be in somebody's hospital right now, not getting up, singing, and wrestling more match. I like heel Ferrara quite a bit. I like cowardly little. I really enjoy what Ferrara is doing, and I'm glad they're giving him some chance to shine in front of the camera. Cheeseburger comes out, gives a lackluster challenge to Ferrara for a match, and the fans don't really care. We get a Briscoe promo, which, ladies and gentlemen, if you are into story of any kind, this is called foreshadowing. Jay Briscoe is not cleared to wrestle because of the C word, which they use quite a bit. We don't get that everywhere. The concussion that he suffered at the hands of the Kingdom. He's not cleared to wrestle, but Ring of Honor failed to cancel his ticket to the show. So he's going to be there. This is called foreshadowing. Why couldn't they just do it another way? Anyway, it is the Bullet Club, Adam Page, and the World Heavyweight Champion, Cody the American Nightmare, versus Mark Briscoe and Bully Ray. Mark Briscoe's woefully underrated. I know he's got a weird gimmick. I know he doesn't have teeth in his face. But this guy is a tremendous wrestler and a tremendous athlete. And we hear about Jay, we've heard about Jay, but my God, this guy is fantastic. He started off the match. He's really dominant on Cody early. Goes for a suplex, but Page grabs his leg from the outside. Briscoe tries a front kick on Page while he's on the apron. Page grabs his leg, flips him out. Flips in with the buckshot lariat, which looked amazing. The timing was tremendous on that. Bullet Club has Briscoe cut off from Bully for a real long stretch. They're working the tag really well until Bully finally does get the hot tag. He goes ape shit. I know we noticed that Bully's doing a lot of talking, and I guess it's the smaller arenas where you could really hear it, like he did it in the big arenas with WWE, but the ring's all mic'd up. But you really felt like you were in a ring with this guy with all of the screaming and yelling that he was doing. They get their version of what's up on Page. Bully calls for the tables, and then Marty Scurll comes out to provide the distraction. All he does is get on the apron, opens his umbrella, smiles a lot. Marty's a great showman. And Briscoe comes out to even up the odds. He fights not really through the crowd, but they've got multiple aisles, so they're brawling through the aisles. And then at this point, everybody's sort of brawling everywhere. Bully and Briscoe hit the Doomsday Device, but they don't go for the pin. They try to put Page through the table. Cody cuts him off. Jay beats up Skrull. They're still all over the place there. Somehow, everybody appears to be out of the scene where it's just Mark trying to put Page through the table. Page is laid out, and Mark's on the top turnbuckle. He's going to come off with something on him. Next thing you know, TK Orion comes out, literally out of nowhere, pushes Briscoe off the top rope, into the ring. Cody's right there. Crossroads for the victory. But the Kingdom then run the Bullet Club out of the ring, which should pay off somewhere later along the line. But it's really the assist of the axe that Marcellia has. And I did say axe, like the kind of axe that you chop down a tree or chop firewood with. Why? He's got an axe. I said I was going to repeat myself quite a bit in this episode, and this definitely bears repeating. Why? I know what his gimmick is, but why? Why are we even having matches? Because we could just chop heads and arms off. And why? Like, no to the axe. Like, the axe needs to go the way of the noose. Like, this, it's just ridiculous. And it's ridiculous for different reasons, but no less ridiculous. Like, just do something else, please. Anyway, they clobber Bully. Jay comes in and fights him off briefly. The Kingdom, that is. Taven whacks Briscoe across the head with a kendo stick, I think it was. Rockstar Supernova. Kingdom stands tall, and we go off air. I have noticed that there are quite a bit of run-ins lately, and I'm sure the Ring of Honor faithful do not like this. And this is probably a good month of run-ins, 3 or 4 weeks of run-ins in big matches. The Kingdom stuff I definitely dig with, because this is getting them back into the six-man tag team match picture, which they were knocked out of because of Orion's injury. I also think it has a lot to do with, and this is not me making excuses, it's fine, it's entertaining. I mean, we do want to see matches come to their logical conclusions and not have run-ins left and right. But we're also going into Death Before Dishonor. And I think this is one of those build big feuds, build a lot of animus and a lot of hostility between guys, and then pay it off at the pay-per-view. And that's just my thought. I am sure that I'm sure that somebody has another opinion, and which I'd appreciate. Gerald L. Cooper on Twitter, get at me. And that is it. We are all done for this week. You can follow me on Twitter at Gerald L. Cooper. You can follow us, the WWPN, and visit the website, thewwpn.com, the central hub for all things WWPN, articles, and our shows, podcasts, including, well, just run them all down. Red Zone, Blue Zone, Next Level Podcast, Strong Style Central, Let Me Talk to You, Cage Town, Love a Lucha, Pariso History, and little old me here at the Hour of Honor. Also, check out our YouTube channel, Smart Talk, and Throwback JB doing his thing on YouTube. Folks, that is it for me this week, and I will talk to y'all soon.